Hey, Spittin' Chiclets listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. When did cheap plastic disposables with 90s-style graffiti art become the norm? No offense if gaudy pastel is your style, but the Flonk Max Smart embodies a smarter way to vape. The Flonk is sleek and discreet, and the most popular flavors are available nicotine-free and in 2% and 5% strength. A flexible disposable with a smart LED screen, the Flonk churns out 10,000 dense and delicious puffs. Visit MyPod.com and use promo code STOOL for 25% off Flonk vapes.
What does it take to become a NASCAR legend? Generations of victory.
One of the great masters of the sport.
Motor oil in your veins. Does it take irrational confidence?
Tony Stewart wins.
A little bit of last lap magic. What about fandom that runs in the family? A track where every mile becomes a memory. Or maybe it's simply knowing that new legacies are built one lap at a time. NASCAR Legends, presented by Geico at Talladega, Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Fox.
Everybody, welcome to episode 163 of Spittin' Chiclets, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka. Let's say hello to everybody today. Let's go to Grinnelli first. What's up there, pal?
What's up, guys? Not doing too well. Lost a ton of money this weekend. Worst gambling weekend of my life, but I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah, just ignoring picks I send you and losing. What else is new? Next up, let's go to the Wit Dog. Ryan Whitney, are you home or on the road right now?
I'm home. How are you guys? Mikey, so that $7,000 you were up. And I kept telling you to take out and, like, put it aside. You never did, and it's all gone?
Yep. Should have listened to Uncle Whitney.
Oh, Uncle Whitney?
He didn't
I've
even,
been
like,
telling you since you started gambling.
He didn't even, like, take out $2,500 for, like, a month's rent, whatever. Like, he just got nothing out of it.
Ouch. Tough.
Lose him, you lose most.
Yeah, that's true. And finally, last up, our boy Biz Nasty, Paul Bissonette out in the desert. What's up, buddy?
Oh, boys, tough loss on Friday for the Arizona Coyotes. Fuck, they fell in a shootout to the Colorado Avalanche. Nice third period comeback, though. My boy Oliver Ekman-Larsson with a couple tucks. Stuck it wet. Just kidding.
Like, but 6 hours after, I was saying he's not like a real true shutdown defenseman also.
Well, that is on the offensive side of it, but yeah, unfortunate for them. We are recording before their game today against Minnesota on Sunday. That's a big one. Must win for the Coyotes from here on out with their four games remaining. But hey, the weather here is incredible. I actually went by the pool yesterday. I met up with Trevor Gretzky, and we went to this Hotel Adeline. It was a nice little pool, and there was some trim, and I got a nice base tan. So look out, G.
Wow.
Uh-oh, get that flare up.
Get back to New York City.
You mentioned the playoffs, Biz, and we're in crunch time, man. There's 1 week left in the season. Things are still up in the air as far as the playoffs. Tampa's the only official division winner, though Calgary's clinched practically a formality at this stage. Washington has a three-point lead over the Islanders with three to play for both teams. But Central, very much wide open. Winnipeg and Nashville both have 94 points. The Preds have played one more game. And now the Blues nipping at their heels with 92 points. And then out east, I mean, you basically have Carolina, Columbus, and Montreal all clamoring for the last two wildcard spots in the east. And then, you know, Pittsburgh, we kind of praised them last week. They only get 95 points. They can still be caught. They need to win a couple more games to stay alive. Biz, how do you see things shaking out here, brother, on these things that change day to day?
Well, I was critical of Columbus and the way they the moves they made at the deadline, and now they're making a push. They've been really good as of late. You know, even with the Duchesne comments I had about, you know, not sure if he's a big game player. You know, when they've needed him most, I think he's got 5 points in his last three games with the Blue Jackets, and they were against some pretty important opponents. One being Montreal, who they're going on at that wild card spot with. They're peaking right now. And that's a team I'd be scared to meet in the first round. So I'm gonna put my shoe in my mouth on that one. Now, saying that, they do have a game in hand on Montreal, so it isn't signed, sealed, and delivered. They are tied in points with them. But after that first period they had in Montreal, I believe they were down 1-0, and Torts came in the locker room, and there's actually video of it. And I wouldn't say a full-on Torts snap show, But you could tell he you know, what he said resonated with the players because they ended up going out there scoring three in the second and three in the third and ended up routing the Montreal Canadiens, who they're competing with that spot for, 6-2. So on the other side of that, holy shit, I don't know if you guys have seen Drouin's numbers this down this stretch where they've needed him most. And I know he's faced a lot of criticism, you know, with his play sometimes and, you know, being lazy defensively. In his last 14 games, this is before, this was, I think, after the Columbus game, excuse me. He had one goal and one assist in his last 14 games. He's registered points in just two games in his last 21. One of those games he had four assists, and the other one he had a goal and an assist. So to me, that is fucking crazy. That's a guy that they need producing offense, and surprisingly, they're able to still be in the hunt without him bringing his A game.
Yeah, I, if you look at his numbers though, career wise, I mean, he's probably gonna finish with like the high, you know, the best year, you know, points wise he's ever had in his career. I think that's kind of he is what he is, 50-60 point guy. Unfortunately, you know, when getting hot early in the year, unfortunately, it happened earlier in the year. I mean, he would do anything to switch it and have him be going right now. But I just think this is kind of, you know, who he is, 50-60 point guy, maybe 70 if he gets, you know, some line mates he really clicks with. But it's just tough to go this cold when everyone needs you. And you mentioned Panarin, and I was giving him heat. I said I think he had one in 15 or 16 games, one goal since Duchesne had came. And he's been on fire. Last night, it was a pretty – I don't know if any of you guys saw it. I caught a little of it. Columbus-Nashville was exciting. And the end of the first period was wild. You know, Columbus is up 2-1. Nashville gets an incredible chance. Bobrovsky, awesome save. Like, just like a key moment of the game. You know, 20 seconds left in the period. Panarin gets it. You think, you know, the period's just going to end. He dangles it up ice, crosses somebody over at the red line, then finds Atkinson, who buries it with 5 seconds, 3-1 at the end of the first. They go on to win. So Columbus is finding, you know, what they needed to, and it just took them way too long. I thought it was surprising, but I still think, I mean, if they get in the first round, nobody wants to play them. That's not a fun team that you're looking forward to. Like, if Tampa played them, trust me, Tampa would much rather play Montreal than them, I think.
Absolutely. I completely agree, and that's going to be a grind of a first round. We always talk about the bad luck that Tampa runs into in playoffs and just can't get over the hump, and to me, that's a team that I'd say they'd minimum take them to six.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that, definitely.
I'm not sure. There was a tweet going around before the weekend, so it wasn't updated before the weekend, but it showed that Duchesne, DeZingle, and Stone had the exact same number of points, 26, as Duclair, Lindbergh, and I think the third player was Brännström. I'm not 100% sure, but basically they had the exact same number of points, like, you know, two, three weeks after the trade going into this weekend. So it was just indicative, because I say to Grinnelli the other day, like, you know, when he asked about betting, I says, these teams who are out of it, they're still playing for pride. They're still playing for jobs next year. You know, I mean, like,
it's young guys, RA, too. Like, you're telling me Brady Tkachuk isn't fired up for these games? It's still his first year in the NHL. I mean, it's like, if you get a team with a bunch of 32-year-olds, it doesn't even exist anymore. Maybe at this time of the year, they're shutting it down. But all these teams with young guys, these dudes are getting their chances, like, first NHL game. You know, they're going to be going balls to the wall.
Absolutely. Absolutely. These guys, they're playing their balls off. I mean, Detroit's a team, you know, they've been out of it for a while, but they've actually been a pretty good bet lately. They've been playing their asses off, man. And like, they, you know, bringing up guys from the minors. Actually, they brought up Jake Chelios. I'm not sure if you caught that, son of you know who. He made his NHL debut for the Red Wings Friday night, 28 years old, man. You know, it's great to see. It's a great story. You know, the playoffs are toast for the Red Wings. So they said they wanted to reward some of their minor league guys. And, you know, he's the latest example of a kid sticking with it. He graduated college a few years ago, and now he's getting a shot in the show. Well, it was pretty nice to see, eh, Witz?
It was great to see. And it's a cool story, because it's such a different it was so different for Jake growing up, right? So any kid, if you ever make it to play a game in the NHL, that's an insane amount of odds against you for that to ever happen. So people don't really understand that, because his dad's, you know, Chris Chelios, this kid his entire life has just had like a different perspective. And it's not his dad's fault for being an incredible hockey player, but this kid sees his, you know, his dad, and probably does know how hard it is to be in the NHL, and, you know, people tell him, but he still is like, oh, my dad did it for this long. I'm going to get there. And so to finally get his first game, dude, after grinding that long in the minors, 28 years old, that's just such a special memory, because I'm sure it is. I shouldn't say that. I know it is. But I just think that he's always going to remember, you know, I ended up getting to the league where my dad was a true legend. And that's awesome.
I actually fought him when he was in the American Hockey League with with the Charlotte Checkers. It was fine. Yeah, he was a gamer. You know, they didn't have the best team that year, but you know, he was a good penalty kill guy, stay at home defenseman, and congratulations to him. They actually had Chris Chelios on the TV broadcast, and they were joking around about how back in the day when Sean Avery used to babysit him, and how like he would never be in bed on time. It would just be like, you know, like ruckus going around the house. Shocker. But cool story. I love the, you know, when those guys finally get their shot at least getting one game. You know, you get to frame the jersey. Fucking probably didn't make a dollar, though. He had to put it all on the board for his first game, especially because his old man played there for 1,000 years. But very cool.
Yeah, you got young guys, young 28, I guess, but, you know, motivated guys that want to play spoiler to other teams. And unfortunately, you won't be able to spoil the Blues. They did finally clinch their playoff spot. In doing so, they became just the 7th team ever to make the playoffs after ranking last in the league at any point after New Year's Day. The last team to do it was the 97 Senators. I mean, we basically pronounced them dead on this podcast probably a handful of times back in November, December. What they've done is incredible. Also, too, we want to note we do have St. Louis defenseman Robert Bortuzzo joining us shortly, in addition to Blues superfan and Madman star John Hamm. Got some good stuff coming forward. But back to the Blues, man. It's like I said, they were dead. They pulled the Undertaker gift. They woke up. They're in the playoffs, and they're another team, man. I can't imagine teams want to play with, and they're throwing out Jordan Binnington, eh, Biz?
No, I mean, and right now they're still fighting for home ice. I mean, Nashville has kind of tailed off in the second half of the season, and St. Louis has slowly been gaining ground on them. I know Winnipeg and Nashville are still fighting for that first place in the Central, so things are definitely very interesting here. Could you imagine St. Louis ends up getting first in the Central? That was like, what? Like, those other teams were kind of had the wagon title earlier in the season.
And I don't know. Can they get first? They can get second, but I don't know if they can.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good. You're right. Yeah. Looking at it.
Yeah.
That's even if they could get home ice, even if they get second, and they've dominated Nashville too. That team has been really fun to watch, and it's funny how much they look so much quicker. So I'm watching them now, and it used to kind of be a slow pace, and now it's like this team's flying. So Bortuzzo talks about that a little bit. I was just surprised at the beginning of the year about Tarasenko's start. He just like, well, you know, you expect so much from knowing how good he is, how great his shot is. He wasn't doing that much. His points were kind of there, but not making a huge effect. And he got his 30th the other day. So that's 30 in 5 straight years for him. So that's just an incredible stat. So you see, as he got going, I think the team really started going. And O'Reilly all year has done it.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable turnaround they had. It's going to be interesting, though, to see what they do in the playoffs because, you know, St. Louis, it's been 50-something years before since they've been in a final. Dude, Vancouver Canucks, can we give them credit for a Chicklets bump by calling up Quinn Hughes?
Hughes.
Dude, it's uncanny how much this kid looks exactly like Granelli when they trotted him out the ice on the ice the other night. In case you're not familiar, Quinn Hughes, he was the 7th overall pick in the last draft. He made his debut Thursday at home versus the Kings. And, I mean, the kid made a hell of a debut right away. He made that unreal pass to himself off the back of the net. And he gave himself a great scoring opportunity and led to assist when Brock Besser put the rebound home. 22 shifts in his first game, 15 minutes, 36 seconds, 2 shots on net. But what stood out to me, Witz, and what I saw was the wheels on the kid, man. He was unbelievable whizzing around out there. And I don't know if you caught any of the overtime. They had Hughes, Pettersson, and Besser out there in overtime. They didn't score, but it was some of the most impressive hockey we've seen this year in the NHL. Did you see any of it, Whit?
I did. I also, you know, Granelli, I'm thinking in another life, you could skate like the wind and were the 7th overall pick, and your brothers, your younger brothers were really nasty, but instead you're losing $7,000 when that's probably like a month rent paycheck for you. So it's not smart, but still I'm excited for this Hughes kid. I think the skating is what separates him. It's just the assist he got. He walked, I don't know who it was behind the net. He banked it off the net, tight turn. And then he comes out and does this like C cut, gets all the speed off that, gets a great shot on net, could have scored. And the guy, I don't remember who it was, buries the rebound, but he got a quick point and the overtime was fantastic. They were snapping around like they played together for 5 years.
Yeah, and talk about an organization. I know they've had a few years of struggles, but you know, with the young core group they have, and more than likely get a decent high end draft pick this year, they're gonna be a team to look out for in the next couple of years, boys.
Oh, by the way, NHL.com, you might want to update this kid's page with the headshot right now. It looks like a knockoff Chicklets logo that you'd see getting sold at pirated DVDs on downtown Manhattan. The kid doesn't even have his picture up yet, so I want to fix that. Got to get on that NHL.com. Keeping this theme of defensemen we're talking about right now, Colorado Avalanche defenseman Tyson Barrie became the most prolific goal scoring defenseman in franchise history. He scored his 73rd career goal versus Vegas the other night. He passed Sandis Ozolinch for number one on the list. Number three on the list is the man rocket himself in front of the show, John Michael Lyles with 68. Barrie has spent his entire 480-game career in Denver. He's also first in assists with 231 and points 304 in team history. This is a note that jumped out to me, boys. Ray Bourque, he's 38th in games played in Colorado history, but he's 12th in points. He was only on the team for 94 regular season games, but he's number one in points per game on the Avalanche list. I thought that was pretty interesting for a guy who played barely over a season there.
But and Tyson, how old he was at the time.
Exactly, in his 40s. But Tyson Barrie, you know him pretty well, Biz. He's a guy you talk a lot about. You know, what do you have to say about his season? It's been great for him.
Unbelievable puck-moving defenseman. Those do not grow on trees. They are going to have to pay him this summer. He'll have 1 year left on his contract after this season's up. I would imagine on July 1st, if they were intelligent, they would try to lock him up as long as possible. You know, as I mentioned, it's a classic case of like, you know, he's a bit of a riverboat gambler, though. It's just like, you know what? Every team needs an offensive defenseman. And once you give him up, they're difficult to find. So I would assume that he is minimum going to get paid $7.5 to $8 million a year. I mean, Oliver Ekman-Larsson got 8.25, and Tyson Barrie's offensive numbers are a little bit better, mind you. He is playing with McKinnon, Landeskog, and Rantanen, but he has unbelievable chemistry with those guys, specifically McKinnon, because you know they're buddies off the ice and everything. So I'd imagine Tyson Barrie is going to be a Colorado Avalanche for a long time, and they're going to have to get that deal signed up this summer.
He was hilarious. He came on NHL Now when I was at the network last week, and it was the day after that crazy game between them and the Knights, and they held on for a win. And so he comes on, and I think EJ Raddick was asking him, like, yeah, what are you thinking as that game winds down and Vegas pulls the goalie, and, you know, they have this massive comeback going. And he goes, I don't really know what I was thinking. I was obviously sitting on the bench with a one-goal lead. I'm not on the ice during that time.
He's well aware of what he is as a player.
Then he roasted me something about, he's like, I never heard the name Whitney used in a sentence with versatile, because that was mentioned. So he was all over me by a phone call, but – yeah, dude, he buzzes around the ice. He snaps it tape to tape. It's a lot different, I'm telling you, when Rantanen's got the fifth defenseman snapping one in his skate blade and he's trying to kick it up to himself like Crosby. You know, he likes Barrie just chucking sauces, snapping one right on the tape as he's going full speed through the middle. That's how he's getting points. So maybe defensively he's not your number one guy, but you don't need him to be. I don't know. That's a lot, though. What'd you say, 8.5, 9?
No, I said, I bet you get 7.5, 8 years, oh, yeah, at 7.5 to 8.
Is he UFA?
He's got 1 year left on his contract, okay. But I would imagine, you know, they lock him up, because if he has another year like he had this year, I mean, right now he's got 56 points. I'd imagine he finishes the season with 60. I mean, he's in top, what? I would say that's probably top 15 to top 12 in defensive scoring in the NHL with the way other guys are getting paid. I mean, he can ask for, I would say, if at the time, probably 8.5, 9 in free agency.
Yeah, that's very true. I didn't even realize he had that many points this year. It doesn't surprise me, but yeah, he's going to get paid. That's fucking, it's funny now. Like, we talked about this year, the points are definitely up. I mean, you look at guys with the chance to get 100 points this year. I mean, you already got 4. There's, you know, like 4 or 5 that could do it if they really get hot with 4 games left, but I know that's a little off topic from Barrie, but still, it's good for him. And Colorado, we counted them out. When Landeskog went down, we said they were done, or I did. So I look like a fool. Shocker on that one.
Yeah, I said it too, and I didn't like it. And Rantanen went down as well. So I'll put my foot in my mouth there now. I know there's still some time left. If Coyotes run the table and we get a little help from some other teams, we could still slide in there. So not out of the dark yet for the Colorado Avalanche.
Not over yet. And if you have kids playing hockey nowadays, man, make them puck-moving defensemen, because these guys are fucking raking it in cash-wise left and right.
Yeah, I know. Thanks. Unreal.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if you're from the South Shore. And, of course, Colorado sitting on that lottery pick as well, the Ottawa pick they got. So the future's bright for Colorado, no doubt. We mentioned a few minutes ago, we have Robert Bortuzzo, St. Louis Blues defenseman. You guys talked to him a little bit the other night. I wasn't able to make that interview. So I think we should send it over to him now, eh, boys?
You know how many times he says, you know, in this interview?
I think he says, you know, memes will have a count, I'm sure. He might say, you know, 700 times.
Yeah.
So what a guy, though, you know.
Look forward to hearing it, you know.
I like Bobo. I didn't know it was Bobo. So I'm down with that. I mean, I'll tell you, Roberto Bartuzzo, I have to let him know that that was his name in my head for a long time.
So we're going to send it over to Robert Bertuzzo, you know.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
I want to welcome a first-time guest to the Spit and Chicklets podcast. This fine young lad was drafted in the third round, 78th overall in the 2007 NHL entry draft by the Pittsburgh Penguins. And what do you know? I was there at the time, and I knew this guy was a special kid, a special player, a true guy's guy. And right now he's got 331 NHL games played. And I'd say he's more of a stay-at-home defenseman, but a great guy. And we want to welcome to the podcast St. Louis Blues defenseman Robert Bortuzzo.
What's going on, fellas? Thanks for having me.
That was excellent.
Yeah, not bad. I remember a training camp, Fizz. You gave me a ride home from the airport. It was my first training camp. And we were sitting there, and it's pretty quiet. And you go, I think I'm going on waivers tomorrow, buddy. And you did, and you got scooped up. And the rest was history.
That's true. I called my waiver shot.
You did. I don't know who grabbed you, but I don't remember that.
What do you mean you don't remember who? Fucking Arizona Coyotes, buddy. Well, Phoenix Coyotes at the time. I think I called it, too. I thought I was going to either Minnesota.
You said Mini. Yeah, Mini. You said Mini. Yeah.
Because Fletcher had gone there, and actually, it's funny, three teams put a claim in for me. Toronto put a claim in for me, Minnesota, and Arizona. But because Arizona had finished with a worse record, those two other teams, they got the crown jewel.
They sure did, buddy.
Hey, I can't imagine, like, you're a first pro camp, and you just got this, like, weathered old bum in the car. He's like, I'm going on waivers. Oh, you're like, is this what pro he is?
Yeah, I'm like 19 years old. I'm like, what do I say to this guy? I'm like, right, no, you'll get picked up, man.
Yeah, keep your head up, bro.
I don't give a shit. Just make sure I get my per diem pack and put your seatbelt on.
Hey, I feel guilty, Tuz, that I should tell you this right off the bat, that from the first time I'd ever heard your name mentioned, like, as an NHL draft pick, NHL player, I've called you Roberto Bartuzzo to every single person. It's on purpose. I just think it sounds so perfect. I just want you to know that leading in that you're Roberto Bartuzzo for me.
No, I appreciate it. I mean, there's, you know, we got a couple of Italians on the team. That's the most Italian name you got there is Roberto Bartuzzo, I think.
Should we talk about this turnaround? Because you guys came into Arizona at the start of the year, and poo, you guys did not look good.
Yeah, it was ugly. It was ugly.
Yeah, I mean, we came into the year. You know, there were some expectations put on us and whatnot. You know, we were just playing sloppy hockey. You know, we had the players. You know, so that kind of carried us through games, and we knew we were kind of still in the mix. You know, looking at the standings and whatnot. So, you know, the players on the team carried us through a tough stretch. But you know, it was only till we started playing a team game where, you know, things started turning around.
I just had a brief, you know, moment, I guess, with Doug Armstrong 2 years in a row. He invited me to training camp, not a big deal, a little tryout. Thanks for coming, PTO. But he was – I really got along with him. Now, I'm saying this was very quick, but I sense, like, guys respect him and like him. He's kind of no bullshit. I heard that he came in this year and actually – you know, like, it's like, I believe in this group. I know this group can win. I don't want to start trading guys. I might have to, but I think he knew all along and let you guys know that he still believed in you, right?
Yeah. You know, there was points in the seasons where it was pretty bleak. You know, people didn't know what was going to happen with the group. And, you know, we give him credit. You know, he stuck with us. He doubled down, and, you know, stuck to his guns, and, you know, things, we righted the ship, and, you know, now we're in a pretty good position here. You know, we kind of punched our ticket into the dance here. you know, so it's an exciting time of the year. You know, we appreciate him sticking with us, and it was quite the turnaround.
Roberto, I want to ask you about the few guys you guys added in the offseason. O'Reilly, Bozak, another guy, Maroon. It seems like great guys, and we're eventually obviously turned into a great fit.
Oh, I mean, they're huge for our locker room. You know, they're consummate pros. I didn't know much about O'Reilly, but like, boys, this guy is an absolute player. Like, he carried us through that stretch, and he does. You know, I played with some high end guys. He does stuff that reminds me of Sid did, and Bozak's been a huge addition for our locker room, and he's playing great hockey. And Patty's been a monster in the second half of the year. So, big time players, and they've just been great for our room. You know what it's like having guys that have been around the league and 7, 8, 9, 10 year pros is big for our group. And like I said, we're getting different contributions, but those guys have definitely stepped up and been huge for us.
I feel like O'Reilly's just like a mesmerizing guy. He's handsome. He's got that beard. Apparently he's sick at playing the guitar. He can sing a little bit. Smoke show wife. Yeah, apparently. Can he play the guitar really well?
This guy's the man. He brings his little baby guitar on the road. He's got a couple, ditties that he's written over the years. Like I said, just a cool guy, good dresser, and a big leader for our group, man. He's been a huge addition for our group, on and off the ice. Like I said, I didn't know much about him, but this guy is an absolute player, and what a guy.
Man, that guy, like, usually you kind of think, who's lucky enough to be the star, the one of the best players in the league, and then also be like cool off the ice? Like, you're like, think, all right, hopefully that guy just dresses like a complete geek and has one pair of jeans. He's got it both. Like, I mean, that's like, you just give me one of those, please, and get both of them.
I hear you, buddy. There's certain guys over the years that, carry themselves like that. They're just cool guys on and off the ice, and they just happen to be superstars at the same time.
God damn it.
I hear you, brother.
Bortuzzo. Sorry, I just like saying that. Let's talk about Fabs, man. That guy's been through some shit, some injuries. He's finally back in the lineup. How's he been, mentally after going through that full grind of basically 2 years of being out?
He's been great. To say it's a grind, would be saying the least. He's done an incredible job to battle back. His game is right where it needs to be. For someone to go through that at that age mentally, it's such a grind. I give him credit. He comes in, he works his ass off every day, whether he's in and out of the lineup, comes in with a smile on his face. And, he's just been a consummate pro. For a young kid, like I said, to come back from, double ACL surgery is pretty impressive. He's going to be a big part of our group moving forward here.
I'm wondering, with the difference, with Craig Berube coming in and Mike Yeo being gone, what has kind of changed? Because it's obvious to everyone watching that it seems like you guys are playing quicker. I don't know if that was something you're talking about right when the coaching change happens, but what has it been, what has changed with those two guys?
It's hard to say. Chief's been huge for us. He kind of changed the culture a bit. He made us harder offensively and defensively. He made us play faster with a higher intensity. He's very demanding yet detailed at the same time. Anytime we slip, he's going to let us know. I think our whole staff as a whole has done a great job of, not letting things get too far away from us. And I just think he's a man of few words, but he's instilled this quiet confidence in our group that, if we just go about our business, and, there's so many good teams in the league, but, it's like he says, we're a good team. So, like I said, it's that quiet confidence he's instilled in our group that, if we play our game, we got a chance every night.
Bertuzzo, I got to ask you about Binnington, man. The Bin Nasty, 29 games played. Fucking 21 wins, 5 losses, and one – it says 1T. I don't know what the fuck that means. Maybe it's overtime loss. But this is probably the second biggest factor in the turnaround for this season for you guys.
Yeah, he's been huge. He's played – he's been like a rock, just steady Eddie. you can just see the confidence he has when he goes outside the net with the puck. You know, he's great with the puck. I think that's a true sign of confidence in a goaltender is when they're back there snapping it around, making it easy on the D-man. You know, Witt knows what that's like when they'll break it out for you. So,
please.
Love it.
Please. Just don't give it to me.
I hear you. Snap it right up to the centerman if you can. But yeah, you know, like I said, that quiet confidence I was talking about, he's definitely a guy who has it. He's got a swagger to him. You know, but like I said, very humble, goes about his business, and you know, he's been huge for our group.
Should we talk about the fact that you say you know about 600 times already in this interview?
It's my fault. It's my go-to.
Is that your glitch?
You know?
That's my go-to. You got to have one.
It's like
stumbling over my words. You got to have something.
And if you're doing an interview at the beginning, you know, when you had to drop Biz off at the airport to go to Arizona, you're just like, I got to fill something talking to these guys, you know?
Exactly. No, you'll get picked up.
Well, the biggest turnaround for you guys was, of course, when Larry Flowers brought you guys to that bar in Philadelphia, and you guys ended up getting your winning song, and it seems like the ball started rolling after that.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool experience. There was a lot of little turning points where you could have said things, you know, jumped off for us, but that was a cool little thing for us where, you know, a win song kind of came organically. It was a pretty cool night. Pulled out a win there in Philly, and, you know, it's been the win song ever since. So it's nice when the win song kind of picks itself like that.
Is Parayko like the Russian in Rocky IV? Is like, that's what I kind of picture. I've never met him.
He is the Russian in Rocky IV. This guy's an absolute beast. Just the absolute nicest person you've ever met in your life.
Is he ripped also, or
like,
just big?
Like 3.6% body fat, 6'5".
Jesus.
Square jaw. This guy's the man. He just stands there at the bar, and he's like a bug zapper. They're all just standing around him. It's just unreal.
Oh, is he single?
I believe so. I mean, I don't want to speak
up. Yeah, we don't need to throw him under the bus here.
Yeah,
we should have Larry call in right now and tell the story about how he single-handedly turned your guys' season around.
he would state it as such. Yeah, you're gonna give him a call.
Here, I'll send him the number. Cool. Let's see if he can call in. Oh,
Larry's first appearance on.
Here, I'll send him the number. Let's see if he's going.
There's been like four non-hockey players on the pod, and Larry Flowers is going to be one of them.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of non-hockey players, we had John Hamm come on, and we were wondering when he was there for that game in St. Louis, did he end up coming down to the locker room afterward?
Oh, yeah, I came down to the locker room. We were able to have a drink at the lobby after the game. Like, this guy knows his stuff. Like, he is a fan of the Blues, and, like I said, anytime a sixth defenseman, like, Roberto Bortuzzo, you know, you're a true fan. So, great guy. He's pretty close with Steiner and Kelly Chase. And like I said, a couple years ago when we had our deep playoff run, he was always texting Steiner and getting the load on, seeing how the boys were doing. So, he's a true fan, man. He's a great guy.
Okay, so Larry just texted me. He's going to be calling in right now. But before that, so we found out that obviously, we've seen pictures of Hamm and how he has a huge wrench. I don't think the guy wears underwear. Before we got him on the pod, I think RA was the one who mentioned it, that he doesn't like being asked about it because he's like, they're private parts for a reason. So thank God we didn't ask him about his weapon. But did he come in the locker room? Was his bat just flying around?
I wasn't keeping an eye. I think, like I said, it's kind of like this unspoken myth in Hollywood or whatnot. No, it wasn't going to be the first thing I brought up to him, but
pussy.
Right.
Let me see your dick.
Nice to meet you, man.
I read something. He's like, yeah, I mean, they call it private parts for a reason. And then later on, I think he said, it's not the worst rumor to have started about you. It's not like somebody's talking about you got like warts on your hog. They're just saying you have an absolute hammer in your pants.
I was going to lead off with it. We would have got a click on the other line and we would have lost our John Hamm interview.
What am I stepping into, buddy? I just called in. You guys are talking about cocks.
It's a 50-50. There's a good chance it's going to be about wrenches on this podcast.
Hey, well, for people, that other voice is Larry Flowers, and Larry's a longtime friend. I'm so happy I got to meet this guy back in the day, and I will say right now he's the number one jeweler, NHL, Major League Baseball. We're going to talk more about that. Believe it or not, he actually helped me find my ring. My wife has, Jesus Christ, you saved me a little money, but geez, I'm still hitting that one. I'm gonna hit on that one. But either way, Larry Flowers, thanks for joining.
It's a pleasure to have you on, boys. I really appreciate it.
Where should we start? Should we talk about you single-handedly changing the season around for the St. Louis Blues and how it happened?
I mean, I'll take the credit. I don't know if it's really on me, but yeah. I mean, look, the boys were playing in Philly, and you know, we have a private members only social club down in South Philly, right in the middle of the neighborhood, and the Eagles just happened to have been playing the Chicago Bears in the playoffs. And I talked to Bobo. I said, Bobo, you got to get all the boys together. You guys should come over. It's a great time. We have a great group. So he puts together the group. You know, our closest buddies on the team: Steiner, Fabs, Schwartzy, Edson, and Bobo. And you know, these guys get in an Uber, and all of a sudden, I give him an address, and I get a text message from Bobo. He says, "Hey, Flowers, are we in the right place here? I mean." Boys are a little nervous. Like, I mean, this looks a little sketchy. And I'm like, boys, you guys are safe. I mean, full disclosure, there may or may not be a couple members of this club of ours that may or may not be connected to, you know, to the mob. But that's another story. But they're pulling up, and they're a little nervous. And anyway, I'm like, listen, you guys are in good hands. You're good. And they walk in, and the boys went nuts, and we had a full-on just good time, good party. And So the Gloria, the boys in the club are part of a New Year's brigade. It's like a New Year's thing that floats, and there's a competition in the city of Philadelphia. It's a major event, and our club, the Jack Club, happened to have won the entire New Year's brigade. It's a major honor, and their victory song became Gloria. So naturally, the Eagles were playing, and it was an unreal game, and. And one of the boys yells out, you know, play Gloria for the Eagles. And the boys on the Blues, you know, Bobo and the boys were like, Gloria, this is hilarious. And they just kept playing the song over and over and over. And they kind of adopted it and kind of made it a fun thing for themselves. And it makes me real happy and proud. I love the Blues are unreal. They got a great, great group. I'm real close to the whole squad. And it's nice to see them doing well.
Bert, you guys are part of a Cobble crew that you guys usually go down there during All-Star break as well, correct?
Uppy's the organizer. You know, he sets us up in this giant pad of a friend of his. Billy Quinn is his name. And, you know, it's a house that, you know, definitely we have no business staying in. It's, you know, beautiful place up in Cobble.
O'Reilly, like, but not you.
Like, literally, and no, just Thunder Bay, Ontario, where I'm staying in a $20 million pad. What's going on here? But, yeah, so I... The first time I went was with Larry. We knew each other. We'd met, but this was kind of our first trip together. And, you know, this was my first experience with him. We're all getting ready to go out. We're getting ready for dinner and going out. And, you know, me and Schwartzy were ready already. So we're like, let's go check on Flowers. And clearly Flowers is Philly to the core. And so we start walking closer to his bedroom, and the doors cracked, and we start hearing like music, and we walk in there. And the Rocky soundtrack is playing on his little Bose dock, and he's in his underwear doing some sort of like pump up, going out shadow boxing routine in the mirror. So he's working the combos in the mirror as he gets ready, gels in his hair. So me and Schwartzy pop our head in, and we just start dying laughing. So it was good stuff. That was the first encounter with Larry Flowers, really.
We've been putting this 3 years we've done this trip, and it's a great group. We just have so much fun. And obviously, Uppy spearheads the whole thing, like he does everything in his life. It's just, we have so much fun. It's a lot of fun, and it's crazy.
How did you become good buddies with Loops and Uppy Flowers?
Yeah, so I've known Loops for about 10 years. You know, we had a mutual friend, and when he was playing in Philly, we met in L.A., and a couple years later, actually it's when I met you, Biz. He had one of his legendary little July 4th shakers at his pad in Newport Beach, California. And, he's like, hey Flowers, why don't you come down, man? I'm having a sick shaker. So I get there and I walk in, and I gotta tell you, I was like, wow.
Like, oh yeah. You're talking about the ladies that were present?
I'm talking about the
I had a stand-up 6 upstairs in one of the bedrooms that afternoon. That was one of the best days of my life. That was probably top 15 days of my life.
Listen, I'm telling you, I walked in there. I'm looking around, and I'm like, this is a shaker. And I'm watching Uppy, Loops, and O'Brien just kind of mingling within each other and doing their thing. You know, and I'm like, look at these fucking guys. They are hilarious. I mean, they've got it figured out. They truly got it figured out. And I'm like, I got to get in this crew. This is what I've been missing in my life. And sure as shit, we just all get real tight. And so many years later, they're my best boys, and I'm the luckiest fucking guy in the world. They're great.
So you weaseled your way in. Bertuzzo, I don't know if you've heard this story. Hey, tell that volleyball story. This one's all time.
Fuck. So this is actually last year. We go to an unbelievable party down in, it was in LA at the beach. It was a private party. It's like Leo DiCaprio's like crew. And they have their private party. I mean, you can't even get within like 500 yards of this place unless you're on like a special list.
I bet your RA can sneak in.
Oh, he may not be able to get in, but so anyway, we get to this party. It's me, O'Brien, Loophole. We get there. Lou Cheech is there. I mean, you want to talk about a party? I mean, there were broads everywhere, and I'm not talking like really hot sevens. I'm talking like nines, tens everywhere. The settings on the beach is a big volleyball court, and Leo and his crew are on the volleyball. They take this serious. Every year they want to just play volleyball, and they're winning. They're like 3-4 games deep, just beating everybody's ass. It's Leo, Jamie Foxx, Gerard Butler, Kevin Connolly, and all of a sudden, you know, we call winners. Finally, it's like, hey, let's get on here and kick these guys' asses. So finally we get on. It's like I said, it's me, Lucic, Shane O'Brien, Joffrey Loophole, and some other random. And I'm looking around like, let's kick these guys ass. I can't wait to go home and tell my friends in Philly. Well, we just kicked the shit out of Leo DiCaprio in volleyball. This is going to be great. And the game starts, and these guys get out on a little bit of a lead on us. And I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And I hate to throw my boy Loophole under the bus here. For the record, obviously he's a tremendous athlete, but he's a sick volleyball player. He's a sick volleyball player as well. But he just wasn't really on his game. I don't know if he was a little starstruck.
Starstruck.
I mean, I was starstruck too, but I'm like, fuck him. Like, I want to beat him, right? This was Leo DiCaprio, Jamie Foxx. These are celebs. I want to kick their ass. So, you know, maybe we each had a couple too many cocktails. I don't know. But anyway, he Luke is just not playing that well. He's missing a couple shots. And finally, I'm like, I walk over to Luke. I grab him. I said, what the fuck's wrong with you, man? Wake up. We got to look at everyone's watching. Everyone. Your girl's watching. Let's go. And he's kind of looking at me with a silly grin like, yeah, flowers. Yeah. And sure as shit, the next serve goes right to him, right through his hands, boom, right off his forehead. And I'm like, fuck, we're done. They whooped our ass. I walked off the court.
Oh, that was your one chance.
That was my chance.
And then Leo fucks all your girls.
If you think your girl wanted Leo before that, then you're a loser coming back with your tail between your legs.
No shit. That was one shot. One shot at it. We just choked.
Are the boys
that was a great party. That was a great party.
Are the boys thankful in that locker room that Larry Flowers brought you guys to that shady bar where you guys didn't die and turn your season around, Bertuzzo?
Oh, yeah. That was big. Like I said, it was a big turnaround for us. Larry always said, you got to get me a mug. That's what he always said. He's used that quote multiple times. I need a mug. So
get me my mug.
We appreciate the support. Larry's kind of adopted the Blues as his team. Like I said, we got a lot of good guys on the group and a lot of good buddies with Larry.
I gotta tell you, I mean, look, it's one thing to have some good buddies on the Blues. They got an unbelievable group of guys, but you know, a couple years ago, about a year and a half ago, Uppy and Shenner, Braden Shen did something for me I'll never ever forget. The Eagles played in the Super Bowl, and anyone that knows Larry Flowers knows I'm a diehard Eagles fan, and I'm talking diehard. And Shenner, obviously, they both played in Philly, and Shenner's real close to the owner of the Eagles, and they went out of their way to do something special for me. They got me some tickets to the Super Bowl, which I ended up going to with some friends from Philly and watching them win their first Super Bowl against the Pats. And one of the best moments of my life. I'll never ever forget it.
That's a hockey guy.
Listen,
If there's one thing I could tell you, I'm truly, truly so privileged to have the friends that I have. And I've been around so many guys in the NHL. I've done so much business with so many guys in the league. And truly, the guys in the league are special, especially the people I hang out with. And there's a lot of generous guys out there, which I've taken advantage of as far as generosity is concerned. But they're great, great guys. And I'm just very, very, very fortunate to be friends with some of the boys and some of the things they've done for me.
Awesome, Larry. We love you, buddy. And we'll definitely have you on again if you got any more crazy stories. Maybe next time we'll tell a story about how you went to high school with Kevin Hart.
We could tell that story. I mean, listen, if you really want to hear the good stories, you're going to have to pay me a lot more than you're doing this.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Buddy. Thanks for joining us. We're going to finish off with Bert, and maybe we'll see some St. Louis Blues fans with a Flowers jersey on if they really love the team that much. Bert, what else do you want to talk about,
Larry,
buddy?
Goddamn Flowers. What do you got for me, buddy?
That's the perfect outro. Larry Goddamn
Flowers. Larry Goddamn Flowers. No, he's a great guy. And like I said, he's a loyal friend. And a lot of that carries over into his business. So, we can talk about the Updog. The Updog's feeling good. You don't count the Updog out, boys. The league's better with the Updog in it. His knee's feeling better.
You think the Blues will sign him this offseason?
I don't know. He's trying to set the record for most teams made on PTO. I think he's got 3 now. So, 2 on the Blues for sure. So, like I said, he the dream ain't dead for the Updog. He's going to make a push now. He said he got the clear bill of health. And like I said, he'd be a great addition to any locker room, in my opinion.
Love it. Well, Bert, we appreciate you coming on, especially so close to playoffs. We wish you big time luck. I know we don't know who you're going to be playing yet, right? That hasn't been decided.
Yeah, no. I mean, she's tight. I said, we're pushing every night to set us up with the best chance for success and whatnot. Like I said, it's a log jam right now. So happy we punch our ticket and we'll just kind of be ready to go here.
All right. Love you, buddy. Good all luck. Right, tell the boys.
All right, boys. Hello.
See you, Bubba.
Fellas, thanks for having me. Talk to you. TV's on, nobody's watching. Lights low, phones off. For a week, it's stripping
down a little. Let's keep it simple. Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Big thank you to Robert Bertuzzo and, of course, our boy Larry Flowers, who helped turn that season around for the St. Louis Blues. Great having them on. Some great stories. And what else do we got, R.A.?
The Professional Hockey Writers Association tweeted out the Masterson Trophy nominees on Friday. The Masterson Trophy is awarded to the, quote, player who best exemplifies perseverance, sportsmanship, and dedication to the sport, end quote. We've talked about this award not at length on the podcast. We kind of emphasize the other awards a lot. So that's what we want to talk about a little bit today. A lot of times it's old guys who just stuck around a lot. And I see a lot of guys on the list this year, which I think is good, Biz, because usually it's a guy who had a real bad injury or might have had some personal difficulties. My pick is probably Robin Lehner. He's a guy who battled back not only from, addiction issues and mental health issues, but he had an unreal fucking year. I mean, 22-12-5, a 2.17 goals against, and a 9-8 save percentage. After battling what he went through, he wrote that piece. I believe it was in the Athletic. Unreal. He really bared his soul. That's not an easy thing to do. And I got to think he's probably the favorite to win it. Is there anyone you were looking at in particular, Biz?
No, I think that would be a great pick. I believe Grabner was mentioned from the Coyotes as well. He almost lost his eye this year in a game. He ended up missing 40 games. But anytime anyone can overcome addiction and get back on their feet and then, of course, play up to world-class standards. You know me, boys. I'm a sucker for a comeback story. So I think that would be a great pick. All right.
I looked around and I looked at the list, and it's cool to see all the names, but one that popped out to me is Taylor Fadun. And I don't know if you guys know what happened to him, but he was in camp with Edmonton when I was there. Mm-hmm. And it was his first year out of school. He played at Princeton, I think. Yeah. Either way, he played 4 years, goes to Edmonton training camp and was lighting it up. Like I couldn't believe it. Every guy was like, who is this kid? Just like great gap, playing awesome, great breakout passes, gets in a game, plays awesome, gets in the power play. Like, dude, this kid's like an NHL, he could play in the NHL, like, and nobody knew a thing about him. And we're in Minnesota, like 2 games left in training camp. So, you know, you got about 6 extra guys. Maybe there was 3 or 4 extra games, so you still have 6 to 8 extra guys. But he goes back and gets stuck. Actually, it was with Eric Nystrom, I believe. Totally fluke play and broke his femur. And I was sitting in the balcony with Horkoff, Taylor Hall, and Fedzie was screaming, dude. You could hear him screaming. And I was like sick, so sick to my stomach. Forget about what he was doing playing wise. Just like what was happening to him. You're like, oh my God, like somebody I know like is in this much pain. It was it gives me the chills thinking about it. And then, you know, you start thinking, dude, this fucking kid out of school, like was dominating. What the, talk about just unfair. Fuck, such is life. But I'm so happy now that he's come back from that. And that year he did such intense rehab. In Edmonton, he did a great job getting in the pool, and all the guys in Edmonton did awesome, the entire training staff. But still, you don't know, dude. I mean, you break your feet.
How did he do it? Just like going into the wall?
Dude, it was like, I think Nye went to, he was like forechecking, and I don't remember exactly. I'm pretty sure like his stick got kind of in his skate, whether it tripped him or like whatever happened, and just went in and like, just at the wrong angle. Oh, it just like gives me the willies. But to come back, and he was a great skater too. So then you're like, oh, fuck, that's the kid. And, you know, it happened to Curtis Foster too. I played with him. He never was the same player. I mean, it's like you have a fucking rod in your femur, dude. And so for Taylor Fadun to make an impact this year, I think with Dallas and play some good hockey, the fact that he's gone through that and done this is a testament to him. So it's cool to see his name on that list.
Wait, that's a great call. I remember he broke his leg, man. That was a terrible video. And a couple other names on the list too. Corey Crawford's been battling from concussions, and nice to see him come back. And, you know, even Curtis McElhinney, he's a guy I've talked about quite a bit this year. Kind of a journeyman backup, and now he's having a career season. So a nice story. But like I said, my money's on Lehner. We had a few more milestones. We seem to be having a ton of these lately, and we like to recognize these guys in the NHLPA. And Thursday night in Vancouver, Dustin Brown became the LA Kings' all-time leader in games played when he took the ice for his 1,112th game wearing the crown. Now in his 15th season, Brown passed forward Dave Taylor, who spent his entire career with the Kings and was also the guy that drafted Brown 13th overall at the 03 draft. Dustin Brown, of course, captained the LA Kings Cup winners in 12 and 14. At 23, he was the youngest captain in team history and also the first American to do so for LA. He was the captain from October of 08 till the end of the 16th season before giving way to Andre Kopitar. Pretty cool thing they did with the jerseys. I don't know if you caught it, Biz. They made a unique label on the collar to mark the occasion. It was pretty cool. I'm not sure if you saw it. We can tweet it out from the account. But you played with and against them, Biz. What do you have to say about Dustin Brown?
Well, I was on the ice with him in training camp. I didn't get to play any NHL games with him, but I appreciate you trying to kind of dress it up a little bit for me, R.A. Respect, buddy. But talk about a gamer. I mean, I know people rip on him about his contract, but last year he had a very good year statistically. This year he's kind of kept that pace as well. But, buddy, just a piece of shit to play against, the type of guy you want on your team. And if when you use the word gamer, you kind of reference when the games matter most, and especially in that first cup run. I mean, he was a point of game guy. We won't talk about the knee on knee with Roosevelt at the blue line in the defensive zone against the Phoenix Coyotes at the time, and which pretty much cost us our chance at the cup. But, no grudges here. He's had an unbelievable career, and he's a honey badger.
I just can't stop like thinking back to the World Juniors. He came second one in Halifax. He was a magician. He was doing fucking magic tricks on everyone. I was like, come on, Brownie, tell me how to do it. He's like, nah, get out of here, Whit. I was like, oh my God, who is this kid? And he was trucking people then. So he's always been someone I think that looks like he could play in the NHL. He was a stud when he was younger, and I'm just happy to see the career he's had. He's a really nice guy, and I think that he'll go down as a great leader for all those teams in L.A. that were hard to play against. They kind of embodied how he played.
Yeah, his only non-NHL games were during lockouts. He played for Manch Vegas back in 05 and then in Zurich for the Swiss League back in the
13 lockout. Also, congrats to Kings goalie Jonathan Quick. He played in his 600th NHL game that same night. Just the 51st goalie all time to hit that number. So congrats to the American Quick. Saturday night, boys, we got a nice little dust up, a little playoff preview perhaps between Vegas and San Jose. Very physical game. Saw a lot of chippiness, a lot of after the whistle stuff. Looks like each team is trying to send a message for next week when the series starts. The only difference I'd say, San Jose, they won an OT, but they did face Malcolm Subban and not Marc-Andre Fleury. That'll change come playoff time. But Biz, what'd you think of that game? Those setting the table for the playoffs or what?
I love the way Vegas plays. They come at you in waves. And, you know, with the struggles that San Jose have had lately, I think that was a perfect game for them to get back into playoff mode, where all of a sudden, you know, you got to keep up. And we know the type of pace of play that Vegas plays with, you know. And, I think it should be interesting moving forward. And maybe this is kind of the kick in the ass San Jose needed. So a big win for them.
And a lot of times in playoffs, it may take a period or two for the nastiness to start, for the hatred to get going, but they just got it going early. They're going to play each other, and I think that they're probably thinking, all right, well, going into this game, like Biz says, San Jose is saying, we've had our struggles. This has been embarrassing, but now we're facing this team in 2 weeks when it really matters, so let's fucking go. And then after that, it was an effort. I mean, the whole game was exciting to watch, and then the chippiness really did make it feel like a playoff game.
Yeah, it was good stuff if you hadn't caught it. I can't wait for the playoffs. I know Vegas isn't in California, but it's interesting that the California rivalry, it's sort of like the New York City rivalry. There's three teams instead of a two-way rivalry. You know, you got San Jose, Anaheim, LA. They all hate each other, it seems like, equally. And then, you know, you got the Islanders, Rangers, and Devils. It's not like a one-way rivalry. It's kind of a three-way thing. So
yeah, but I feel like Rangers, Devils, to me, is the big rivalry, and LA, Anaheim. Like, I feel like the Islanders and the Sharks are a little bit on their own. Like, I don't think like it's an equal rivalry between all three of them.
Right. No, there's definitely a bigger rivalry of them, but it seems like each team has fucking hate for the other teams. Now, one other career note before we send it off to the Hollywood man rocket, John Hamm. Devin Dubnyk reached the 30-win mark for the fifth consecutive season. Only one other goalie has an active streak of five or more consecutive 30-win campaigns, that Braden Holtby at Washington. So shout out to Doobie for another great achievement, having a great year. But, boys, John Hamm, man, this is a career thrill for me, talking to the guy who played Don Draper on Mad Men Wits. I know you had a couple of questions about Roger Sterling toward the end there. You're a big fan of Mad Men?
I love Mad Men. I forget when I started watching it, but I remember being like, this is slow, but all of a sudden I was into it and watching them all. And so, yeah, I had to ask about that legend Sterling. R.A., I'm surprised you didn't say this is an interview with your co-star. I mean,
well, I figured I'd let one of you guys say it instead.
All right, well, with that, we'll go to Hollywood superstar John Hamm.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
You know our next guest for his sublime Emmy-winning work as the brooding, boozy Don Draper or Dick Whitman on TV's Mad Men, his frustrated Fed Adam Frawley in the armored car heist thriller The Town, and his hilarious turn as cult leader Richard Wayne Gary Wayne in Netflix's Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Welcome to the show, John Hamm.
Well, the reason that you're on, and the main reason that I think that we know you as hockey fans is your diehard passion for the St. Louis Blues. This year, I was blown away by your call. I think it was Barbashev's goal in L.A., one of the calls of the year, as you saw that go down. I'm just interested in your beginning as a Blues fan. I know you grew up in Missouri, but tell me how you got into, you know, hockey and the game overall.
Growing up in St. Louis, like, it's a Cardinals town. It's a baseball town, right? Like, that's just – it is what it is. But in the 70s, there was the Blues played in what was called the Old Barn, which – because it was an old stockyard where all the cattle used to come up in the old days. They converted it into a arena in the I don't know, 50s, 60s. So the Blues came around in 1967. I was born in 1971. I'm almost as old as the team. But tickets were cheap. And my dad would drive by. The arena was right off the highway. My dad would drive by and say, you want to go to a game? And I'd go, yeah, let's go. And we would pull into the parking lot, grab a couple tickets and go watch the game. And it was really exciting and fun. And I didn't know how to play hockey. I didn't grow up playing hockey. I couldn't really skate. We didn't have access to ice that much. But I just loved watching it. It was so different and fun and exciting. And then throughout the 80s and 90s, when we started getting good, and we had marquee players like Holly and Shanny and Chris Pronger and guys like that. And that's around the time, just after college, I started waiting tables. And so all the boys would come in after the games and come into the bar that I worked at and eat and drink. And so I got to know a couple of those guys, and I still do. And it's a really nice kind of community of, you know, friendship that's bonded by this love of the game.
They're like, I'm in the NHL. Why is my wife game facing the bus boy over here right now? What is going on? But no, so it's funny you mentioned that, how your father was the one, hey, you want to go in? Because I think most kids who play, like, you know, Paul and I, our dads got us into the game. But I'm guessing your dad knew nothing about the game either. It was just, hey, cheap ticket, let's go in and support the local team.
He was a business guy. Like he ran a trucking company. And I think he just knew that it was a fun event. It was very social back in the 70s in St. Louis. Like it was a very social event. Like just a bunch of people, you know, went and kind of celebrated. It was always a boozy night. Like it was always people would get their drink on, and there was a bowling alley right next to the arena, and people would go bowl after the games. It was just like it was a very fun kind of Midwestern night. I remember it being very very fun.
John, when you were bussing tables, were there any players' personalities that stuck out to you from the guys who would come in? Like, would you buddy-buddy with any of them, or any of them assholes?
No, they were all nice. Like, it's being a dick in St. Louis doesn't get you very far. So it's like everybody was pretty nice. I do remember when Pronger first came in, because we traded Brendan Shanahan for Chris Pronger. He was like 19 years old. And I just remember him sitting at the corner of the bar. And of course, he's not old enough to drink, but that didn't really matter. But he just seemed like such a sad dude. And I remember going over to him, because I think I was bartending at the time. And I just remember going over to him and saying, like, hey, man, just give it some time. Like, it's going to take a little bit for everybody to forget about Shanahan. He was a pretty beloved figure around here, but they'll come around on you. And it took a little time, but everybody eventually did, and he became one of St. Louis's favorite players.
Like, which Blues era, like, particular group of players had the biggest impact on you becoming a fan? Was it, like, the 70s, the 80s? What was, like, which, like...
It was definitely, team? Like, the Hall & Oates era. Like, so it was Hully and Chaser, Shanahan, Adam Oates. Oh, God, we had so many crazy players back then. Garth Butcher, Ujo and Nanette.
John, I had a question for you. You think it's ironic that all of a sudden you have that awesome goal call for the St. Louis Blues, and then Ron Burgundy comes back out of nowhere, and all of a sudden he's back in the NHL buildings?
I did notice that. I mean, I got to say, like, you know, kind of biting my style a little bit there. It was fun though, man. I love going to hockey games anywhere. I'll go anywhere. I've been to several arenas around the country and in Canada, and I just love going. So I like going to the Kings games, but I especially like going when the Blues play. And it was a blast. Like they kindly enough asked me to come up to the booth, and I just saw it. First of all, it's a great place to watch the game because you can see the whole ice, and it's a great angle. And I'd never really been up in the booth before for a hockey game. And I just saw the play develop, and it was like, oh, this is looking good. And that Sammy Blake kid he's really good. He's for a tough guy, he's got pretty soft hands. And it was a beautiful pass he made to Barbashev, and Barbashev just buried it.
Well, it's funny you mentioned being up top. I think it's just cool because you can see the entire play develop, whereas, you know, you're down near the ice. It's tough to see how things are kind of happening. But you mentioned you've been to a bunch of arenas. Is there one that sticks out as your favorite? And, you know, you can't just say the Scott Trade Center, whatever it's called now in St. Louis. You ever been to a game in Montreal?
I don't even know what it's called anymore. I think it's the Enterprise Center now. But I've literally lived through about 10 different names of Blues buildings. I will say that I haven't been to to see hockey in Montreal or Toronto. But when I was in Vancouver, I shoot up in Vancouver quite a lot. Their fans are pretty pretty lusty and loud, and that's that was a pretty great place to go watch a game. I watched the Blues play there once, and was in it, decked out in entirely all my Blues gear, and everybody was not thrilled, but it was really fun, and everybody gets into it. It was the first time I had mini donuts, so it was pretty good too.
A lot of funny smells in the air at that Vancouver arena too. They're always they're always burning it during the game. It's pretty funny. How many games a year do you get to between LA and St. Louis?
Not as many as I'd like, and I try to go if there's a special event. Like a couple years ago, the Winter Classic was in St. Louis, and me and about six or seven friends of mine from growing up back in St. Louis, we all made it a point to get tickets and go. And then and I'll go if I'm around, I'll go to during the playoffs. That's generally when I'm able to go, because I'm usually out here, and it, the way the schedule works, it, you know, the teams don't play the West Coast that often, so the Blues never get out here. I'm rarely back home.
Do you still have that anytime pass? I know you had that card a couple of years ago. You can just show that and get into any game anytime you want to. Do you still have that?
I do, but I think that was a different ownership group. I don't think it works anymore. It's still sitting in my desk.
So shifting over to the Blues, I mean, it's been almost 50 years since their last Cup final appearance, 1970. You know, where do you attribute the biggest obstacle to them getting to a Cup final? Has it been ownership? Has it been management? Has it been bad luck? A combination of the three? What do you think the reason is they just haven't been able to get over the hump as a franchise?
Well, I think it's obviously a combination. I think, you know, we've had the right pieces, and it's just for whatever reason they haven't. Playoff hockey is like a game of Tetris, you know, it's like fitting everything into the right right form to make it into a straight line. It's sometimes you don't get the right pieces, and sometimes you get bad luck. And so, I mean, we've had some amazing teams. I'm thinking specifically the year we won the President's Trophy. I think it was 91, 92 maybe, but that was Hulley scores 50 in 50 games. And I mean, we've had elite players at every position on our team, and it's just not worked out. And I think some of that is just the way the playoffs go. You know, I mean, a couple years ago, we were two wins from Nashville over going to the final, and we just couldn't get it done. You know, Pekka stands on his head, and you can't solve the guy, and that's going to happen too. You know, you run into a hot goalie, or the other half of it is you're the beneficiary of a hot goalie. You know, you see guys flurry the other year. You know, these guys all of a sudden, they just go on these runs. And, you know, we've been fortunate enough to have in a guy like Bennington, a guy that's been doing that and hopefully can carry it over through the playoffs. I think this team's got the skill and the youth and hopefully the health to make a pretty deep run.
How confident are you in this year's team? You think they have everything that it takes to win a cup or what?
But you know, what I think is great about this team in particular is that they've experienced getting close, and they've also experienced not getting in, so they're hungry. And I think they've got guys like Alex Steen on the, you know, in the clubhouse that are leaders, and they got young guys that really want it. And I think that's a pretty deadly combination. And if you guys between the pipes are solid, and they're scoring goals the way that these guys have been scoring, when they put three in against Tampa Bay in a minute and 15. You know, it's obviously things like this happen in streaks, but it's been pretty fun to watch.
John, if there's if you had one opportunity to go back and put the gear on and fight one of your nemesises from other teams that St. Louis have played against, who's the one guy you like to beat the wheels off of?
Well, you know, the during the 80s and 90s, the big rivalries for St. Louis were always Detroit and Chicago, and we had some pretty epic hate for Bob Probert. And, you know, it's obviously never speak ill of the dead, and God bless him, but he was particularly hated in St. Louis. And I remember talking with Kelly Chase a little bit. He's like, oh man, whenever Probert would get on the ice, he's like, I knew I'd have to go out there. It was just such a tough son of a bitch. I look at Chaser now, and I'm like, he's such a like little old man. He's such a sweet guy, and he's just remember back in the day. And he just go out there and mix it up. He's a sweet guy.
We had Chaser on, and he's an animal. He likes to tell some stories too.
The best. He's the best, and his his wife, his family. He's just such a nice guy. He's a that's the kind of thing again. That's what I remember about that particular era of the St. Louis Blues is just guys like that, him and Shanny and Hully, just nice as the day is long and great players, you know?
Yeah. We actually had Adam Oates on too, and we were begging him for Brett Hull stories. Cause there's just so many legendary Hull stories of him just basically not, it seems like he doesn't care, but he goes out and he just snipes. Did you spend some time hanging with him or have you gotten to know him in the past?
Oh yeah, I've hung out with Hully. He's a great guy. You know, he's an icon in St. Louis, obviously. And yeah, you know, Hully had that ability. He's the kind of guy, like you said, like it doesn't seem like he's trying, except you know that guy shot 3 million pucks in the nets. You know, it's not a mistake that he's that good. He's blessed with an incredible talent and an incredible ability to, you know, lean on that talent and make it happen. So watching him, I remember I was at a game, the Blues were playing, this must have been 2001 in San Jose in the playoffs. And I was shooting up in Central California. And I mean, this was in the early days of the internet. I like, bought tickets off eBay. I was like, whoa, I can do this. And arranged to like meet the guy at the thing by the statue. I've never been to San Jose, so I don't know where it is. I meet the guy and I give him a couple hundred bucks and I say, hey, I'm here by myself. If your buddies want to go, I'll just sell you back the other three tickets. He goes, oh, no way. Of course. That'd be great. So me and his friends all sat with me and I'd never met these people. And I bought them all beers and we watched. And first period, Hull, we were right down on the glass and he scored a goal. I just saw the puck go right off his stick, right into the net. It was so cool. He was so good. Such a snipe.
No, he's so incredible. And we talk a lot with guys who, you know, formerly played the game or currently and people who, you know, cover the game. But for someone like you who's, I mean, a big Blues fan, but you don't get to see a ton of hockey. I'm curious on your thoughts to where the game is now, to where it was in the 80s when you're talking about Bob Probert and Chaser and those amazing fights. I mean, do you miss that part of it or do you actually enjoy the skill level and how it's changed as the game's gotten younger, basically?
It's gotten younger. I think everything's gotten young. You look at baseball, you look at basketball, yeah. You look at even football, and every sport has trended toward the young. And hockey's no exception. It used to be in the old days, you would get these guys on the ice that were 20, 21 years old, and they couldn't hang, you know? They'd go up against Grimson or whoever, and they'd just get destroyed. And they'd miss, you know, 2 weeks with a lower body or whatever, you know, because they're just not big enough. Well, now the way they're conditioning kids and the way their youth programs are run, these kids are coming out of college, you know, yoked and they're just in amazing. So they're ready to play at the professional level and you watch and it's amazing to watch. Is it better? Is it worse? I think it's probably better on the whole. It's certainly more entertaining than watching, you know, a 1-0 Devils team play a neutral zone trap for the, you know, 60 minutes. Like it's, taking, you know, allowing for the 2-line passes and moving through the neutral zone a lot faster, it creates more exciting hockey. And when you watch these guys that can skate 90 miles an hour sideways, you know, that's pretty impressive. And put a tape-to-tape pass, you know, from two zones away, it's impressive. It's fun to watch. That's why I think the Blues, they've got a lot of that.
John, there are other fan bases. They have, you know, shorter droughts than the Blues have had, but they're real pissy about it. How come Blues fans like aren't as angry? They seem like they don't come across as angry. Do you guys just hide it well? Because it seems like you should be pissed off as much as like say Flyers fans. Maybe.
why aren't we angry? I don't know. I think, you know, to go back to your hometown, I think it's like the Red Sox. Once they won it in 2004 against, you guessed it, the Cardinals. The fan base then started expecting it a little more. Before that, it was just, they were kind of the lovable losers, right? It's the Cubs the same way. And I think we have a little bit of that mentality of just like, oh, well, you know, wasn't our year. Next year, we'll go get them. I think if we ever get close again, if we ever threaten the finals again, I think the fan base will get a little more rowdy.
John, hypothetically.
I don't know if you've ever been to a game in St. Louis. It is loud.
We support our team. It's a great place to watch hockey.
I thought you said you're a fan. You didn't know me and Ryan went to training camp one year on a PTO.
I went 2 years in a row. They brought me back to be a jester.
Well, there you go. Nice.
John, I have a hypothetical. If you could trade in your acting career for a 20-year NHL career playing for your hometown team, would you do it right now?
Would I do it? Honestly, no. It takes too much out of you. Like, I've seen what it does to your body. I watched after the game here in LA, I went downstairs and said hi to some of the boys and, you know, just watching everybody get taped up and put back together after games. I'm just like, oh man, like for me, when I'm done acting, I get to go take a shower and, you know, have a cup of coffee. Like this is just a lot easier. I'm like, this is
Are you married, John?
No. I was with the same girl for about 16 years, and we broke up a couple years ago.
Oh, geez. Way to kill the buzz, Biz. Jesus Christ.
I was in St. Louis when the Red Sox did win the series. Then it's the only time it's the only time I had a fan base actually congratulate me on winning. Like, we were with the Sox won, and, you know, Cardinals fans would come up and say, hey, congratulations, and shook my hand.
I've had a lot of friends that were from Boston that mentioned that was the case.
Do you have a hard time finding fellow hockey fans when you're on set, you know, just to shoot the shit about the game with?
They are not as plentiful as baseball and football. I will say that. Obviously, it's way more fun when you're shooting in Canada because everybody on the crew talks hockey, and half of them are in fantasy hockey teams, and they all know a lot about the game. So it's a lot more fun up there, especially during the season when you can bullshit with people. It's not hard. Plus having the app, the NHL app and the NHL network now, like that's been huge. I can watch on the fly all the time.
John, RA often pumps his own tires about his acting skills. I've been starting to push some content out, and you're pretty okay yourself. Would you ever be down to maybe do a collab where we maybe have an act off for some content? Because I don't know. I've been pretty good.
Yeah, sure. Anytime.
Yeah, sure. As he changes his number after this interview.
Well, and we don't have a big budget. I just wanted to save that for last.
All right. I've worked at all budget levels. I'm working on Top Gun 2 right now, and I've worked on, you know,
you're any tiny you're movie.
RA just creamed his pants. Let's wait.
Top Gun 2.
I missed that casting call. No shit. Congratulations.
They didn't call you, huh?
No, man.
Oh, I'm sorry.
They hooked me up, man. They need a fat Baldwin guy to fly a jet. I'm your man, brother.
yeah. So,
John,
I'm,
do you remember RA?
No.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Of course I do.
Yeah, fuck off.
I totally remember Joe Lawler. I mean, I mean, we're talking about 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
2009. Exactly. But it was, I have a lot of fond memories about working on the town. And most of them was, meeting, because there were so many folks like you that were locals that were cast in it. And it was really fun kind of talking to everybody and meeting everybody. And the first time I'd spent any time longer than like a day or two in Boston. So I really got to know the city too.
I'm guessing you had a fun time working there then.
Blast. Absolute blast.
Well, it was funny. We mentioned Joe. He was originally selected. He was supposed to be the fourth bank robber, in that crew there. But because of his, colorful background, shall we say, his insurance was going to, he was going to need more insurance because he's going to be handling weapons. So they're like, sorry, Joe. And Ben Affleck was crestfallen. He's like, oh my God, Joe, I wanted you so bad. He goes, but I promise I'll put you somewhere else in the movie. So what's he end up playing? A Fed. They wouldn't let him play the bank robber because of his records, but they let him play a Fed, which I thought was absolutely hilarious.
So good. So I remember going back and for the premiere, they had the premiere of the film at Fenway Park, and they put a screen up and everybody sat down the first baseline and they showed it there. It was really great. And one of the guys that was one of the federal FBI guys that was our technical advisor on the show, I was sitting next to him and he was sitting next to one of the guys who was one of the advisors on the bank robber side of it, who he had arrested like 25 years ago. And they're bullshitting back and forth about how, oh, man, I put you in jail, you son of a bitch. He goes, And these two guys are going back and forth. It's like, what's going on here? This is too weird, like life imitating art.
Well, we talked to a lot of former players, and we kind of asked them if there was a moment that really helped them make it to the NHL, if there was a certain person. Was there a gig you got, a job you got, where you look back now and you're like, dude, that kind of got everything rolling here?
You know, like, I think part of it was literally just moving out to LA. Everybody, yeah. And I have a lot of friends back in St. Louis, and they're all kind of mystified when, even now, I've been out here for 20 some odd years. I mean, oh my gosh, how did you move to LA? It's such a big city and this, that. And kind of like, well, you know, there's the time to do it is when you're young, obviously. And then it's, you know, it's a risk, but it's one you think, well, I might as well try it now. I remember being 25. I had just taught school for a year. And I thought, if I'm going to do it, it's now or never, basically. And I figured there's, you know, what's the worst that can happen? I'll come out here and I'll suck and I'll not work. And then I'll turn my car around and go home. And I came out here and I sucked. It took me a while to get a job. And then slowly but steadily, I started booking gigs. I don't think there's one I can point to. I think it was more about the process, you know?
John, like, I know it wasn't overnight success to you because you were humping for a long time, but to, you know, to fans and TV viewers, it seemed like overnight success. What was that like going from, you know, a relatively unknown actor to now you're playing fucking Don Draper / Dick Whitman, spoiler alert. Now you have this huge role and, like, you know, tabloids are all up your ass and you're a star now. What was that adjustment like? That must have been a troublesome thing, no? Was it hard to deal with?
Well, it's not easy, but it's also because there's no rule book, right? There's no handbook. No one says, all right, here, now you're famous. Now here's what you're going to do. And you're going to talk to, and this is what's going to happen. And these people are going to start following you. And this is what you're supposed to do. You just kind of have to, go through it, and it's not the worst. I mean, you know, it's obviously, it's great to be, recognized for the work you're doing. So that part of it was fantastic. Like, you know, being in a show that became a cultural phenomenon and became a hit is a phenomenal experience. And, you know, going to the award shows and going to all the photo shoots and the this and the that was all really fun. You just have to kind of remember that it's kind of all bullshit too at the same time. Like, it's, you can't put too much credit, give it too much credit, or else you go crazy.
John, I always wondered, I'm not saying necessarily you got uncomfortable, but making out with an actress and then, like, maybe, like, after the show having to meet their, like, significant other, like, how fucking awkward is that?
It is pretty weird, I will say that.
You're just like, hey, then we got to take it over.
What's up, bud? Her breath's awesome.
You have to be very kind of, you know, honest and forthright and polite and, you know, obviously you don't want to come off as some kind of weirdo creeper. So generally it's an awkward situation. It just is. It's, you know, 90% of making movies and television is awkward because there's just so much that can be misconstrued and what have you. So it's just important to be, you know, polite. That's, you know, I think my mom taught me that, at least. Just be polite.
John, your dramatic bona fides are obviously well known with Mad Men and The Town, but you've shown you're pretty adept at comedy as well. Bridesmaids, Kimmy Schmidt, the cameo in the outstanding show Barry on HBO. Do you have a preference, comedy over drama? And is it true that comedy is harder to do than drama?
I don't have a preference necessarily. I'm very fortunate to have some kind of credibility in both sides of the world in that respect, which is really kind of great, you know. And I get to work with people who I consider, you know, incredibly talented and funny, whether it's Hader or, you know, Kristen Wiig or Tina Fey or, you know, what have you. Part of that was being asked to host SNL by Lauren in back in 2009. I mean, he, for whatever reason, wanted me to be part of the show, and I was able to do it, and I had a great time doing it, and And people liked it. So I got to do it three times, which was really fun. Is one harder than the other? You know, they're both tricky, but they're both the kind of thing where if you surround yourself with the right people, they become a lot easier. And when you're working with a guy like Bill Hader on Barry, for example, it's easy to be funny because he's just funny. When you're working with Kristen Wiig on Bridesmaids, it's not that hard to be goofy because she's just so good. Tina is the same way, you know, Kohler, Maya, all those guys, they're just great. And so I'm lucky. Like a lot of people don't get asked to go play on that side of the pond. You know, you're only asked to, or you're made to kind of stay in your lane. And, I got lucky.
John, was the pizza review with Dave Portnoy one of your hardest acting gigs?
the pizza review? that's the funny thing. I'd never even heard of that thing. And then the kid that came by was like, oh, my God, you're the pizza review guy. And we were like, yeah, he also was nominated for an Academy Award. It reminds you of where you exist in the cosmology of kids.
Are there any directors you want to work with in particular? There's so many great ones working today. Any one or two that you're dying to work with?
Oh, yeah, the list is long. I mean, you know, you look at the Iñárritus and Alfonso Cuarón's and Scorsese still making great stuff. Chris Nolan. I've had the very good fortune to work with some great directors, you know, Edgar Wright. I mean, Ben Affleck. Ben is a fantastic director. And the proof's in the pudding, you know. He's made three great movies. But Edgar Wright, I got to work with. He's also very good. It's an impressive skill. It's something that I'm really impressed, especially with Ben, because I know how good an actor he is, but also like you just think, oh, you're just going to go ahead and be really good at this too. Huh? Good for you, dude.
What about for the Blues, back to them a little bit. You're busy Top Gun 2, but are we going to see you at a Blues playoff game when the second season gets going?
I hope so. You know, I haven't really been paying attention to the standings too much. I know we're 2 points out, 2 points behind, I think, Nashville for the second spot, but I don't know what seedings would be like. I don't necessarily know who I'd want to play in the first round, but I don't know. I haven't gotten down that rabbit hole yet and freaked myself out with that whole matchup stuff, but I hope that eventually they get out to the West Coast because it'd make it a lot easier for me to come see them.
Well, don't forget about the content and movies we're going to create together. Maybe we can compete with Goon 1 and 2. I don't know if what you got on your plate after this Top Gun thing, but let's get down to business, John. Don, stop laughing. I'm dead serious, buddy.
This is a verbal
contract that we're going to get some stuff done. And R.A., what do you got to say to your buddy here?
Hey, it's been a treat, man. It's funny how life can take you funny places. I mean, we were on a movie set 10 years ago, and now I'm interviewing you on a hockey podcast. It's pretty wild. Now, your buddy's with Rudd, too, right, Paul Rudd?
Yeah, Paul and I go way back. He grew up in Kansas City, and I grew up in St. Louis, and we met each other back when I was 17 years old. So
that's funny because I actually interviewed him when he was doing the junket for I Love You, Man, like 8 years ago. I interviewed him at Fenway. So,
oh, wow.
It's kind of crazy how life turns out. But it's been a pleasure talking to you, John, and we really appreciate you coming
on. Hey, last question I have. The guy, I feel bad not knowing his name. The guy who played Roger Sterling, is he as cool of a cat John as he Slattery. Comes off? Is he as cool of a cat to have a beer with, like in real life, as he just looks on screen?
Absolutely, he is a very, very dear friend of mine, and he's a great guy. He's got a great kid. His son Harry is I want to say he's a sophomore in college now. I've known that kid since he was six. And then, he's a great – Slatty's a great guy. Newton, Mass. He's a
– There we go.
Child of Boston. So he is a proud Red Sox and Pats fan. And other than that, he's a good dude.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, and that kind of makes up for you forgetting to send R.A. his Oscar invite in the mail. People make mistakes, but
– Extras matter too, John.
Thank you so much. And thanks hope we'll all run into each other one time and enjoy a beer at a game.
I hope so, fellas. Thanks again. I really do appreciate you having me on.
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive, and the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
Big thanks once again to John Hamm. Like I said, man, it was such a thrill to talk to him. It's pretty funny. 10 years after being on a movie set with him, I get to interview him for a hockey podcast. So, loved it. Loved it. Great stuff. Biz, you got something to share with the audience, I understand. Story hour?
Well, I just, current events, I go through all these situations and I figured I should share this one. Some of you might learn some from it. Some of you might think, hey, you're an idiot. How did you not already know that? Well, so I don't know much about cars, right? So I usually buy new vehicles and I'll make them last about 5 or 6 years. But whenever I go to the dealership to get oil changes, they're going to say, hey, man, you need a new air filter. And I kind of roll my eyes. And if I don't really need it, I wouldn't know. But I don't want to fuck around with my car. So I say, all right, just put the new fucking air filter in there then. And how much is that going to cost me? Oh, this plus this plus this. And it's like, oh, fuck, here's my credit card. Just take it. Well,
we're the marks for them, basically.
Yeah, exactly. They see a sucker from a mile away. And I'm a principal guy, so as long as like you're being reasonable, and I'm like, hey, at least throw me a car wash and a detail, and then I can go away happy. So I pull up, and I just hit 30,000 miles on my Jeep, and the guy's like, oh, are you gonna get your 30, 60, 90 done? Like throws out some term like that, and I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? And he's like, well, typically every 30, 60, and 90,000 miles, people get like a little like package where they revamp everything. And I'm like, okay, well, what's in the package? So he starts listing everything off. And I said, well, I remember coming here a couple times ago and you sold me a couple of those things you just mentioned. Like I got a memory like an elephant like that. So I said, pull up my list. So he goes into it, and sure enough, it shows like a couple things that he's already sold me in that. I said, okay, we'll take that off the list. And considering you tried to charge me whatever it was, $599 plus tax for it, dock that off of it, and I'll get the rest of it. So he's like, oh, okay, like I can do this, what I can do for you. I said, buddy, I said, get it under $500, wash my car, detail it, and vacuum it inside, and I'll get this package because I know I'm getting bent over a little bit, but I let's meet halfway here. So he kind of rolls his eyes and, because he wasn't able to sucker me into as much money as he thought he could. So, I go away for 2.5 hours. I come back. I said, all right, like, where's my bill? And he goes, oh, yeah, it's just over 500. And I'm kind of like, well, no. I said, get it to under 500 and we're doing this. So I said, show me the itemized list. Shows me the itemized list. The air filter's on there. I said, bud, you fucking sold this to me last time I came here. We had this conversation before I left. Are you fucking kidding me? And like, I'm in there and like the lady's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm saying, it's like, not your fault. I said, it's that guy's fault right there. He's trying to rip me off. I know how this goes. I know he's going to see commission from that. So it's a principal thing. So I tell you what, if I go back to this dealership one more time and I try to get fleeced, I'm going to fucking put the number on this goddamn podcast. I'm going to have all our cult leader or cult following just dummy their reception. Like, I'm not fucking standing for the bullshit.
Dude, I've been into, I swear to God, I went, the third time I went to get my car serviced, like over a couple month period, the guy's like, hey, you need new brakes first time. Yeah, okay, put new brakes on. Hey, the other brake pads are worn out. The front's now screwed. All right, put them on. Third time, he's like, you just want to buy a backup brake pad. I'm like, really? Like, I would have done it. And finally, I text him. I'm like, do I need to buy backup brake pads? They're like, what are you talking about? So I'm like, I can't even go in there now without someone that knows cars because I'll be like asking, what else can I get? What else can I get? I feel so lost in those places. It drives me insane.
And I'm sure a lot of people are getting fleeced. And once again, like, do I know I'm getting ripped off? Yeah, but it's just like, okay, we'll lower the number to a number where I'm okay with paying it, and I get the peace of mind that my car is not going to fall apart, which it won't. But hey, if I need a new air filter and he's telling me I need a new air filter, I guess I need a new air filter. I'm not going to sit there and argue the guy because I don't know that I don't need a new air filter. How many times can I say air filter? As many times as Bortuzzo said,
I do like the feeling of driving away, like after just getting a car, just like detailed and serviced or whatever. Like you just feel like a new man.
And the guy's kind of like rolling his eyes, like, I'm the bad guy here. I'm like, bud, I just put money in your pocket. I know you got a sales commission on that. I told you that I got the air filter last time. You showed me because you pulled it up on the iPad. I said, see, I knew you sold me a couple of these things that are on this list. And he's like, oh, yeah, no problem. And then tries to put it back on the fucking list. Give me a goddamn break.
Nobody fucks you like the dealership, though. They're like the last resort. I brought my car in for a brake light, and they're like, we'll do an estimate. $5,800. They wanted to fix every little thing on the car.
That's where I go, the dealership.
Oh, they always fuck you there. You got to find like a local guy who fucking does it on the side.
I know, but if the garage looks dirty and disgusting, I'm not going there.
No, those are usually the best ones.
Fuck that. Make your place look nice.
All right, that's my little rant for the all day. Right. So I'll keep you guys in the loop. And if they try to fleece me again, we're going to have some fun with them. We're going to be calling in. We're going to be doing like, what's her name? Like Laura Love Me Long Time type shit.
People are listening like, no, please, no. Please don't fuck over Biz again.
Hey, on the show, we dump on social media and humanity quite a lot. But this story is one that might restore your faith in both a little bit. Penguins fan Kelly Sawatsky, she held the sign at a recent Penguins game and said, hey, Gensel, I'd love a hockey stick, but what I really need is a kidney. The Penguins' eagle-eyed social media director saw a bright sign from up high. She sent down one of her dispatches to go take a picture of it. And then the Penguins tweeted it out on social media. The girl, like said, basically kind of half-joking, but dead serious, I need a kidney. Well, lo and behold, another Penguins fan, a teacher in Delaware named Jeff Lind, he saw it. He got tested. He was a match, and he gave his kidney to a total fucking stranger. It's just such an unselfish act that again, saw on social media, this dude decides, I'm going to give a kidney to a total stranger. It's, again, this world is fucking cold, hard, mean. We talk about it a lot. So it's nice to have a story like this from the hockey world that literally warms your heart. It's such a nice story. A stranger would do this for somebody that he doesn't even know, never met before.
Did you saw the Instagram? Did who posted it to their Instagram channel?
It was on. I saw it on the ESPN Instagram. That's the okay. One you sent to me. And what was?
Yeah,
cool.
They put it on IGHTV or whatever, like Instagram TV, because it's a long clip. I believe it was about 6 minutes. So if you guys get a chance, go watch it. It's a little emotional. I sent it over to RA today. So what do you think, RA?
How much later did it take? Like when she was at the game with this sign, when did he like give her his liver?
They didn't say actually how much in the clip, but it seemed like it was pretty fast moving. I mean, I would say it probably happened over the course of maybe several weeks to a couple months, because obviously it's time is of the essence when you need to give somebody a transplant. But what was pretty funny and pretty cool, she was in recovery room number 87. So naturally she named it Sydney the Kidney.
I love it. I love it.
So, yeah. So it's again, a nice story. We don't get too many.
A good thing. That was a good social media story. That's good.
Exactly. Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
Oh, boys. And I got some clarity on the mustard pack situation.
Oh, I've been waiting with bated breath.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently mustard is like an allergen. No, that's what people tweet me. It's like it's something that a lot of people are allergic to. So because of lawsuits and stuff, they don't want to be liable. So they have you put it on yourself because they don't want any cross-contamination. Now, saying that. Ugh, like what? Like, so what is, why does Subway not do it then?
I don't know what's gone on in like the last, say, 25 years, but I didn't know one person growing up with allergies. No one was allergic to anything. Why the fuck is everyone allergic to everything now? I mean, like, you can't tell me something weird isn't happening with either the food we eat or God knows the water we drink. Sure. Because why now do all these kids have peanut allergies and shit? The only kid with allergies actually was Tom Pody. He couldn't be around like anything. He could actually eat McDonald's. He crushed McDonald's. It was one of the only things he could eat. But one time somebody left like a little, might have had a peanut butter bagel or something, and there was peanut butter like on the phone. He picked it up and it was like it could kill him almost. So I know it's obviously been around forever, but I feel like now everyone is a lot more commonly allergic to stuff than before.
Absolutely. The modification of food has definitely.
I don't even know what that means.
Major. But as in like they create like wheat in labs so they can make it way cheaper. It's like, I'm probably not the first guy to ask about the science side of it, but just the modification of natural foods and preservatives and all this bullshit that they put in it. Now, keep in mind, it's one of those things where, in order to feed North America, think about how much food that we have to produce. And the population keeps growing and growing and growing. So, you know, in order to feed everyone, you got to do it cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, only certain people can afford to eat and go shop at Whole Foods where it's all natural food and the cost to produce the natural.
Maybe this is why people are eating. You said people are eating the TV dinners, Biz.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, well, that's another reason.
Your other point.
Yeah, you go to, I mean, you go get a nice steak from Whole Foods. You're, I mean, for a pound steak, you got to pay like $20-$25 for like a grass fed organic steak.
Grass fed. I think it's just indicative of other medical issues. Like, I think diagnoses are way up, but not actual cases. Like, I saw that ADD documentary on Netflix, and you know, just because
fuck, everyone had ADD back in the day.
Just because they're diagnosing it doesn't mean somebody actually has it. Because you know, once you diagnose somebody with something, then what happens? Then you get a script. Now you're on the prescription train for fucking life, and fucking who likes that? Insurance companies, big pharma, everybody makes money off it when you get diagnosed with something.
I by the way, I misspoke there. It wasn't back in the day. It was like, this kid's dumb. This kid, why can't he pay attention?
That was me.
Well, now
I was in high school.
Yeah, that kid probably has like learning disabilities or ADD. But yeah, I mean, those Ritalin pills and all that shit. I mean, people are making bank selling that stuff. So I guess you're right. But I still think allergies is different. I mean, that's like, well, you could die if you have peanut butter. I mean, that's like a little different. You think that the people are still like almost getting diagnosed with allergies, but they're so minor that it doesn't even matter. You mean?
No, not so much with allergies. Obviously, you don't want someone allergic to something, eat something. But I think just
meant like in the medical world.
Yeah, in general, right. Diagnoses for a lot of things are up because, again, once you're on that script train, then they fucking love you. Then they can cha-ching. You got insurance.
Hey, can I just thank you, RA, for bringing up the fact that if we would have talked to John Hamm about his wrench, that he probably would have hung up the phone. So we would have wasted a full 30-minute interview with a movie star. Because I thought it was pretty funny how all these pictures were on Google of this guy going commando and his, like, we're talking about like a horse cock, right?
Yeah. Am I like a soft baby's arm just hanging down in these pictures walking around the street. He definitely doesn't wear underwear. Either way, was it RA? Did you see the thing that was like he was. He got like rattled about it one time in an article.
Yeah, they mentioned to him. It could have been TMZ asking him too, like, and you know, they're already fucking fed up with those idiots. But yeah, he mentioned their private parts, their private for a reason. And yeah, we don't want to torpedo our interview just for a laugh. But it was funny when we tweeted out we were having him on. I think 75% of the replies were the fucking wrench emoji.
Yeah. And a big reason why a lot of people hate our podcast because we talk about dicks too much.
Nah, I don't know. I think people kind of like it, you know.
I'm in a group chat with like my wife's family and her sister's husband's in it, and he sent me the whole group chat a video of his son like using like putting a screw in with a tool, obviously. And, you know, there's women on this text like, "Hey Ryan, what's this tool?" I'm like, "You motherfucker, that's a wrench."
It is fucking hilarious.
Like, why is this that type of talk getting brought to the family group chat?
Boys, what else do we got?
You know what, Biz? It's been a couple of weeks since I had some wages for the crowd, but I'm going to bring the gambling corner back a little bit. You know, it's
I need some picks, RA. Give me the good stuff here.
You're going to use them this time? Grinnelli texts me Saturday. Who do you like? And I give him fucking Ottawa. Who says bet fucking Ottawa on the puck line? And he doesn't do it. Plus, whatever, they were at 380 or something. He lets it go by the buy side. So
the problem was you gave me two picks. You gave me Dallas and Ottawa, and I picked Dallas, and I hammered Dallas, and it was like a save me Saturday night pick.
See,
and that's just like my bookie texted me this morning and was like, "Are you okay, man? Like, you need some help."
Yeah, you don't look okay.
He's tired from his fucking NHL debut the other night. But anyways, I did mention the last couple of weeks of the season, it's tough gambling, man. It's like you got teams looking to upset, teams you think are going to suck, they don't. Having said all that, I do like a couple of teams in the next couple of days. Monday, April 1st, Colorado is at St. Louis. The Avs need this game a lot more. St. Louis is in the playoffs. They're jockeying for position, but Colorado needs W. So on that game, I'm going to go with the RA special, which is a money line for a unit, puck line for a half a unit. My second and final pick on this episode's corner, Tuesday, April 2nd, Carolina is at Toronto. Again, another situation. Carolina needs this game. They need to get in the playoffs. Toronto is basically locked in on that third spot right now in the Atlantic or whatever the hell the division is, Northeast, whatever they call it. Same thing there. Carolina for a money line for a unit, puck line for a half unit. Those are the two picks. We'll see what happens. But if you are gambling, again, careful out there. Tread lightly. A lot of weird shit happens the last week of the year.
I love RA picking against the Blues during our Blues-centric episode with John Hammond and Roberto Bertuzzo.
Roberto.
Because that's a ballsy pick. You're picking against St. Louis. Toronto's got a good team. I'm impressed by that. But obviously, Grinnelli ain't impressed enough to listen to you last night.
Maybe he'll smarten up in the meantime. This week's Gambling Corner is brought to you by TripActions. There's a reason half of business travelers do not use their company's chosen travel management platform. Booking business travel is still ridiculously outdated, time-consuming, and costly. If you're frustrated with your company's travel management program or lack thereof, you need to look into TripActions. They take the pain out of corporate travel with a complete solution that helps businesses save and keeps employees happy. The reason TripActions works so well is that it's the first travel management platform designed from the ground up with the road warrior in mind. It's easy to book your company's business travel from the app or desktop, so easy, and with 24/7 proactive support around the globe and incentives for employees to save on travel expenses, companies large and small see over 90% adoption and save up to 34% on travel when they use TripActions. It's a no-brainer. Companies from Lyft to Sarah's Lee's Frozen Bakery, they trust TripActions with their business travel, and you should too, because TripAction rewards travelers for saving their company money, and they'll reward you just for checking them out. Reshape your company's business travel today with TripActions. Go to tripactions.com/checklets, complete a 30-minute demo with a TripActions account executive, and you'll get 20% off your booking fees in 2019. It's that simple, but it's this month only. tripactions.com/checklets for a free demo and 20% off booking fees in 2019. tripactions.com/checklets. Biz, you had an interesting note for us. Alexander Barkov, who a lot of people think he's Russian because of his name, but he's actually Finnish, became the fourth Finnish player in NHL history to reach 90 points in a season. Jari Kurri did it 8 times. Teemu Selanne did it 6 times. Olli Jokinen did it. And Alexander Barkov, he may well be the first Finn to lead the NHL in scoring someday, eh, Biz?
He's a stud. And he kind of went from the most underrated player in the National Hockey League to where now everybody knows who he is. And he's solidified himself as an NHL superstar, and rightfully so. And moving forward, boys, I think that Florida Panthers team is just going to keep getting better and better. They have a great core group. I would imagine that they dive into free agency a little bit this summer, especially with the rumors that we've heard about Bobrovsky and Panarin potentially heading there. Could you imagine that team with a star goalie and then adding another superstar forward to that mix? I tell you what, they've done a good job. A bit of an unfortunate year for them. I know a lot of people are talking about the fact that they've blown so many third period leads. So hopefully they can figure that out, because that's a market that could use a couple playoff winning seasons in order to get going.
Yeah, Biz, unfortunately, they didn't get the goaltender I think they needed this year. They're spending almost $8 million between Luongo and Reimer. Both those guys are on the hook for 2 more years after this year. So they're going to have to make some really hard decisions as it pertains to their goaltending situation. Obviously, if you're going to throw money at Bobrovsky, you're going to have to get rid of one of those other guys. And if they had, even I would say slightly above average goaltending, they're probably competing for a playoff spot right now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because they certainly have a great forward core down in Florida.
Yeah, they need to add something, because I'm surprised. I thought this year they were going to get in. I really did. So goaltending is an issue.
Whitney, one thing that people have been asking for the last few weeks, we teased it a while back, but we haven't actually talked about it.
Oh, Free Solo.
Free Solo, the documentary. Go ahead.
Biz, do you know what it is?
I have no idea what this is. Oh, is this the hiking one?
Yeah, if you want to call it hiking. Hiking on steroids and HGH and crack.
Dude,
this guy is he just climbs mountains with no rope. It's like he's just a free climber. So I got into this movie that my buddy said he watched. He's like, dude, it's unreal. It's like you're actually sitting on the edge of your seat. So they're following him around. First of all, the guy's very a little different, a little weird.
Oh, yeah.
You got to be, right, to be doing this. But there's some screws missing up top.
Yeah, speaking of diagnoses, right?
Yeah, exactly. Diagnosis says this guy's a nut. Dude, he was so flexible. He would be doing pull-ups with the tip of his fingers, because when you're climbing on these mountains, you got one fingertip holding you. If you slip, you're done. And the craziest part about the entire thing is he's got this girlfriend. So he meets this girl. Dude, the girl came to his book signing. Like, she was a soupy. She was a straight-up soupy. So he starts dating this girl, but she's on the entire movie, dude, he couldn't stand her. He like couldn't even stay. It was like, I feel like he was like, get out of here to this girl. Cause you know, she's like trying to talk about it. He doesn't want to talk about anything. I understand why. I don't even know why he would have a girlfriend. The guy can pretty much die any day he gets up, but it was the most insane footage. I mean, the guys that filmed it, dude, they were fucking climbing this mountain. I think it's El Capitan in Yosemite National Park or whatever. I just looking at this mountain, the fact that he climbed up it with no rope and he's doing the tryouts with the rope biz. He's doing the tryouts and he's getting to this one place and he keeps falling. I'm like, bro, what are you doing? Like, how? And he gets up there and then he crushed it. Obviously, he's alive still.
Wait, so he eventually passed that part with the ropes to know which course to take through the hiking of the mountain.
It's funny. I don't remember them showing him get past that. They must have. They must have, because I don't think he would have done the entire climb until he had done the entire route with a rope. Sure.
Well, because he has to know which way to go, right? So that's the whole purpose of him taking the ropes up.
And he would go up and like shave down some areas. Like, I mean, he's getting like the tip of his sneaker and his fingers are like holding him. I still don't understand how it's possible. At some of the points he's hanging pretty much. How is that fucking possible? But it was like edge of your seat thriller watching it. And I was kind of pissed. I knew he was still alive. Cause I mean, it took a little bit of not the fun. I'm not going to say fun, but it looked a little bit of like watching it, the excitement out. Cause I knew he made it, but still even watching just blew me away. But I mean, I don't know.
What's the name of it?
It's called Free Solo. And here's the issue. I'm not a bad guy, but if he's going to die doing this.
Like, yeah. It's just a matter of time, right? Cause if you keep doing it,
they talked about, other climbers that did it, they listed like 28 guys or 30 guys who died. And like, they just like showing them with their pictures, names. I'm like, so obviously something is wrong with them, I guess I could say, but
They're adrenaline junkies where like they only feel alive when they're putting their lives on the line, climbing a mountain and it's really just for the respect of the community.
I don't even think it's a community. I think it's just him. He's wired away where, yeah.
Oh, so is he the only one that's alive right now that does it the way he does it?
No, there are other climbers. You're right. I mean, I guess that is mad respect. You know what? And I said he's going to die. He was talking to a guy like training leading up to it who's still alive, and he's been fucking doing it for 30 years. So
at some point they get to a certain age where they just probably can't do it, or do they not think like that?
Who knows? It was the most interesting movie, like this dude in his life and every day. And like he was going to do it one day. He started biz and then he like stopped. He's like, no, I don't have it today. And it's just a wild watch. I mean, I recommend it to anyone, but I'm interested to see what other people think about it. If he's still with this girl, I'm shocked. I've never seen somebody hate their girlfriend on camera more than this guy.
How was she?
Did you see it, RA?
Yeah, I did. Excuse me. I did see it.
What did I miss out? What did I leave out?
You know what? You pretty much summed it up. Just listeners who want to watch it, I believe it's still on Netflix. It's also been airing on the Nat Geo channel. But you did mention that montage. It was basically like a Faces of Death reel. They're like, let's look at some of the legends of free solo sport.
Yeah.
And then every guy fucking died. Like, everybody who's good at this sport eventually dies doing it. But I thought it was honestly one of the most impressive athletic accomplishments I've ever seen. Just the fact that this guy, like you said, no ropes, no gadgets, nothing. He just fucking scales the mountain with his hands and feet. It's like watching sci-fi. And there was a couple other similar documentaries. Maru, I don't know if you saw that. It's very similar, free climbing a mountain. I think that one's over in the Himalayas. And then there's one called The Dawn Wall as well that's also on Netflix. And these guys, it's absolutely crazy. I think one of the nuttier things they do, Wits, is when they like sleep overnight. And I think it's called bivouacs. They just literally, it's like a little pod, and they sleep on the side of the fucking mountain just hanging there. They're literally just dangling off the side of the mountain.
I've never even seen that.
Yeah.
I've seen the dudes who do like the bat suits and jump off the mountains, and they like kind of fly down the side. It's like in a bat suit.
Yeah. Yeah. Base jumping. But no, this is people who, when they're climbing the mountain, they'll take a break and it's in that Maru. They literally sleep in this like a sleeping bag. But
it's a cocoon.
A cocoon biz, right? But they're on the side of a mountain like 20,000 feet up.
Those people are tapped.
Yeah, it's definitely crazy. It's not something fucking you ever catch me doing. But I think you wrapped it up pretty well. Have you caught anything else lately?
Well, you don't think that he hated that girl?
I think, honestly, I think he has, I don't know, I hate diagnosing people. I think he might be on the spectrum, as they say.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he doesn't like, you know, he doesn't like looking at people when they talk to him. He's socially awkward sometimes. And yeah, you wonder why a girl is even like with this guy who's every day he goes to work, he might die. But, you know, well, women.
Is somebody going to answer my question?
Yeah,
how was she?
She was very attractive.
Not bad. Not
really
bad.
Very attractive.
All right. I'll watch it.
I mean, put it this way. If you're doing a book signing and then, like, she plops your book down in front of you, you're like, whoa. Okay. I mean, it's not some, like, troll.
Did you catch Green Book, Whitney, at all? I know you
liked
the movie.
Yeah, I did. I liked it a lot. Yeah, did we? I don't know. I don't know how the hell that became like an issue. I thought it was a great movie with a great storyline. Like the fact that I'm not getting into that shit, but I liked it a lot.
Did you see it, Biz? No.
No, I kind of started watching it on the flight, but I'd cried enough on the other two movies I watched, so I figured I'd put that one on hold.
What movies made you cry? We got to hear this.
I told you about it last podcast. Oh,
didn't I? I'm sorry. Yeah, I forgot. I didn't realize it was the same.
I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody made me cry a little bit. Like, give me a break, Biz. Not being a pussy.
Oh, you know what made me cry in the bad way was the Dirt. I watched on Netflix, the movie about the Motley Crue.
That's what I wanted to ask. You didn't like it?
I don't know. I wasn't the biggest fan of it. It felt like cheaply made to me, kind of.
That's exactly what I've heard from everybody else about it. And like,
I'm not a cheesy. I don't know. It just I was expecting more. Sorry, Biz.
Oh, no, that's fine. That's exactly the consensus I've gotten on it, was that like it was just like the stories and stuff were cool, but it was like amateur done. Amateurly?
Yeah, I don't know. It's really
help
hard
me out
to
here.
Describe.
Somebody help me.
We'll call it amateur hour, Biz. How's that?
Amateurly done? We're creating new words on the pod, amateurly.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of cheesy, kind of trashy. I mean, basically similar to Motley Crue itself. Like, you know, it kind of captured the elements of the band in the movie. I thought it was a fun movie. It wasn't an outstanding, but fucking worst ways to kill an hour and a half. But yeah, that's going to wrap up this episode, unless anybody has anything else.
No, we should. We're getting down to the nitty gritty and doing the playoff, our playoff picks. I'm petrified of doing it, but that'll be coming up soon. And there's some really great hockey on Monday night, Tuesday night, some big games. So we will see you again or talk to you again. I'm a loser today. I can't talk. I've had a tough episode, but we'll see. We'll see you guys on Thursday. Okay.
Have a great week, everybody.